his father's body on Peaks Island and the faces of Donna and Beau before they had died in that bat attack in Portland. He imagined his mother and the rest of his family who had been killed in the first war. Nick had suffered his own share of misery, too. Now he was crazy, driven insane by the death of those he had loved, the true embodiment of evil. A twisted chimera, fighting and killing for the new gods. Timothy felt the wooden beads of Tasha's bracelet against his wrist. He still had something left to fight for.
"Do you know what it feels like?"
Nick roared again, demanding an answer. Timothy stretched one hand toward his hip, toward the holster there, fighting against the pain coursing through his nerves. He tore his pistol out and pushed it against Nick's stomach. He pulled the trigger once, twice, three times. The chimera staggered backward. Timothy got up and fired again, but Nick still managed to pull his cutlass from his back and started to swing it down. A hand grabbed the chimera's wrist.
"Don't fuck with the mountain's future son-in-law," Horn said.
Before the beast could turn toward Horn, Timothy leveled the gun into Nick's face and pulled the trigger. He crumpled to the ground right in front of Horn. The big man ducked down to pick up a rifle. Three remaining chimeras were distracted and firing down the hallway, holding back Beckham and Ruckley. Horn took them down in three bursts.
"That's what I'm talking about," Horn shouted.
He wobbled, uneven on his feet.
"Clear,"
Timothy called out. He leaned on a lab bench, trying to catch his breath. Every gasp felt like someone was twisting a knife in his side. Blood dribbled down his face as he finally limped toward the scientists and engineers. Kate was kneeling beside one of her injured scientists. Her eyes were wet with tears. Another researcher was already dead, beheaded by the abominations.
"You okay, Kate?"
Horn asked. Timothy bent down next to her. She nodded and rose as Beckham rushed into the lab. They met each other in a deep embrace while Timothy moved to stand sentry with Ruckley.
"Jesus, you all right, Temper?"
she asked.
"My ribs."
He grimaced in pain.
"You guys did good," Ruckley said to Horn.
"Wasn't me," Horn said. "It was all Temper."
Beckham and Kate parted. She glanced down at the headless corpse and closed her eyes.
"We need to get the rest of you to safety," Beckham said.
"There's no time," Kate said. "The Prophet was here. He's headed for President Ringgold now. You've got to stop him."
"I will."
Beckham looked at Horn.
"Ruckley and Timothy, you stay with them."
"I can help," Timothy said.
"No, you can't," Kate said.
"I'm sorry, Timothy, but you might have a broken rib, or worse after that. You push yourself, you'll die."
"She's right," Beckham said.
"Timothy, protect the science team."
"Big Horn, you okay?"
"Got a concussion, probably, but it's not my first. Had plenty in my football days. I can manage, boss."
Beckham measured up Horn with an uncertain look, but Timothy knew that, like Ruckley, Horn was going to fight whether he could or not.
"Ruckley, take the science team to shelter in the basement of the hospital," Beckham said. "There's a storage facility near the morgue you can lock down and hide in until this is over."
He clasped a hand over Timothy's shoulder.
"You did good. Made me and your dad proud."
"I did what I had to do," Timothy said. "Now go kill that bastard for me and my dad."
Dohai awoke on the stage in the throne room, blinking until his vision cleared. He felt the warm grasp of webbing tendrils over his chest, holding him in place. On either side of the stage were the masterminds. Both of them moved lethargically from their injuries. At the front of the stage, Rico and Fitz were pinned down by webbing and guarded by a pair of chimeras. Crunching and ripping came from the seats bordering the stage where three juveniles feasted on Esparza's remains.
"Ah, you're awake," came a voice.
Elijah jumped onto the stage, striding over while holding a cutlass. Dohai fought against his constraints, anger warming his entire body.
"Bring in Murphy," Elijah said.
Rico and Fitz squirmed as a side door opened and three collaborators in rubber aprons pushed out a surgical cart. An old doctor with a bent back followed them onto the stage, shuffling along. The chatter of gunfire reverberated in from outside the building, and the four chimeras guarding the throne room shifted about, almost as if they were nervous,
keeping their weapons aimed at the entrance.
"Call off your dying dogs, Fitzpatrick," Elijah said.
He bent down and poked a hole in the glue over Fitz's mouth with a claw so he could talk.
"Tell the heretics outside that this battle is over, or we will transform her right now, right in front of you."
He angled his sword toward Rico.
"Right, Murphy?"
"Without painkillers of any kind," the doctor said.
Rico thrashed, her voice muffled by the glue over her mouth. Elijah snapped his claws. One of the damaged masterminds lifted a tremoring hand to pull on the red webbing. A few vines dangled from the ceiling, descending toward Rico and shedding damaged pieces from the attack. The intact, pulsating red tendrils wrapped around Rico's wrists and legs. Then they pulled her up, snapping her free of the other restraints and yanking her into an X shape. Thinner strands snaked into her nostrils. Dohai could almost feel the sensation himself. Dark memories of his time in the tunnels returned. He knew the pain and horror. He remembered the voices that would now be calling into her head from other humans imprisoned in the organic network as she became integrated with the webbing.
"Call off your forces," Elijah said.
Fitz remained silent, clearly trying to buy time.
"You heretics are hopeless," Elijah said.
He nodded at Murphy. The doctor bent down to examine the tools on his surgical cart. He opened one of the stainless steel boxes. Dohai had just enough of a view to see a roping chunk of intestine on ice. The three juveniles that had devoured Esparza began to prowl around the stage, their yellow eyes sizing up Rico and Fitz hungrily.
"The first step is integrating variant organs into her body," Murphy said.
"And it is an extraordinarily painful operation," Elijah added.
Fitz glared at the beast, then over at Dohai.
"Stay strong. All it takes is all you got, brother."
Murphy examined the surgical blade he had selected, rotating it in the dim light of the throne room. He brought it close to Rico. She writhed in the grip of the vines, but in response, the webbing stretched more tautly.
"No!"
Fitz shouted. Dohai pushed against his restraints, trying to free a hand. If he could get one free, maybe. A chimera strode over and put a cutlass to his belly.
"Move again and I gut you, heretic," he grumbled.
A rash of gunfire exploded somewhere outside the throne room. This time it sounded like it might have even come from inside the command building. The chimera lowered his cutlass and turned his back to Dohai. The doctor looked up from his cart of tools. Four chimeras moved toward the entrance to the throne room. At that moment, Dohai braced his feet against the wall and summoned all of the strength in his legs, pushing against the webbing covering his chest. His nerves screamed as he strained muscles already bruised from his injuries. But thoughts of what the beasts had done to Ace and Lincoln and Mendez fueled him. Vines ripped away, and he lunged forward with an animalistic war cry, ramming hard into the chimera. Dohai grabbed a sheathed knife on the back of the soldier's belt. More gunshots came from the hallway, followed by cursing screams. Dohai drowned it all out. His world shrunk to his target as he pulled the knife and rammed it into the side of the creature's neck. He punched another hole into his throat, then a third. The chimera slumped, gushing blood, and Dohai picked up the cutlass. He held the blades out and shouted,
"Come and get it!"
The chimera guarding Fitz strode over, swinging his own blade. Dohai jumped back from the slicing blade. The beast swung again, and Dohai ducked lower, the air above his head whooshing past. He struck out with his cutlass, splitting the creature's belly open, and then closed in to stab his knife into its neck. The vines around Rico coiled tighter, like a boa constrictor around prey, and Dohai could see the color draining from her face as he searched for the next hostile. Elijah stood beside Dr. Murphy and his three cronies. They all watched, saying nothing. The juveniles prowled toward him, waiting to strike, and two other chimeras aimed rifles at him.
"What now?" Elijah asked.
"I'll kill you all," Dohai said.
He stood his ground, chest heaving, fresh blood dripping off his blades.
"Like your bearded friend tried?" Elijah laughed. "You have the heart of a warrior, but your faith is misplaced. You won't leave this room alive."
Dohai looked over at Fitz, who was squirming on the ground. Rico stared down at them both, face pale and eyes bulging. Elijah pointed at the masterminds, and webbing snaked from the floor, wrapping around Dohai. He hacked through the climbing tendrils and jumped away, but the juveniles easily cornered him. This was it. Nowhere to run. Soon he would see Ace, Mendez, and Lincoln again, reunited as brothers in death. He raised the blades and screamed again, charging at the juveniles. The creatures hesitated, seeming confused. They twisted, growling, and looking at the doorway. At the entrance were four more chimeras. At first, Dohai thought they were more enemies, but he recognized one.
Corrin.
He and his companions had killed the remaining chimera guards near the entrance. Corrin stormed the room while unleashing a hail of bullets, his team of three chimeras following him. The guards near Elijah returned fire and dove for cover as the juveniles bounded away from Dohai, launching themselves toward their new targets. Two of Corrin's allies went down, and Elijah jumped off the stage to avoid the onslaught of incoming rounds. Dohai wasted no time rushing straight for Rico. Murphy shrieked and tried to cower behind her, but Dohai swung the cutlass into his bent back, slicing it open. The three assistants had already fled. Rico looked down at Dohai as he hacked the vines holding her in place. She collapsed to the stage in a heap of limbs. The vines around her chest wriggled and loosened.
Fitz, she moaned, before her eyes fluttered closed.
Dohai scrambled over to free his other friend while his enemies were distracted. A few slices was all it took. Fitz broke through the rest of his restraints. He crawled over the stage toward Rico, and Dohai took off for the remaining chimera fighting with Elijah. Corrin's last ally went down in a blaze of fire, but at least the juveniles were all dead now. Dohai leapt off the stage and stabbed his knife into the head of a chimera firing next to Elijah. The other beast turned his aim toward Dohai as he crashed to the ground. With a swift strike, Dohai speared his cutlass into the chimera's guts, then pulled down, spilling ropey intestines. He withdrew the blade and stood to face Elijah. The big chimera was now holding two swords. Corrin advanced down the aisle, snarling.
"It's over," he said. "Not for me, you heretics," Elijah screamed.
Dohai climbed over broken seats and joined Corrin in the aisle, approaching Elijah with their swords cocked back.
"For Ace," Dohai said.
Corrin nodded. The two soldiers swung their blades toward Elijah. He met their blades with his own in a shrieking crash of metal on metal, sparks flying. The impact of the metal on metal sent both Dohai and Corrin stumbling backward. Dohai fought through the pain of his injuries, standing unsteadily. Corrin looked to be in equally bad shape, blood streaming from a bullet wound to the shoulder and another to his arm. On the stage, Fitz was giving Rico mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. She had been in worse shape than Dohai thought.
"There's no way you get out of here alive," Corrin said. "Perhaps not," Elijah said.
He paced in the narrow aisle, stalking and sizing Corrin and Dohai up like a lion examining its prey.
"But I will take you with me."
Howling, he lunged toward them, swinging his blades. Dohai parried the attack, nearly losing his grip on the sword from the tremendous force of Elijah's strike. Corrin swung, but Elijah dodged out of the way and then struck back, splitting part of Corrin's chest to reveal muscle and the white of his ribs.
"No!"
Dohai screamed. He tried to thrust his blade into Elijah, but Elijah struck out with his other weapon. This time, Dohai was too slow to deflect the blow. The blade cut into his thigh. He went down hard a few feet from Corrin. Elijah stabbed Corrin through the chest, skewering him with a crunch. The smaller chimera struggled, grasping at the blade with his claws, trying desperately to keep Elijah from pushing it deeper. Grunting, Dohai forced himself upright with his blade in hand. He swung the cutlass one last time, summoning every bit of power he had left in his battered body. Elijah tried to avoid it, but he had been too intent on killing Corrin. The blade cut into the broken skull mask covering his face. Blood and flesh flew away with the shattered bone. Elijah let go of the blade in Corrin's chest, turning toward Dohai as he swung again with all his might. The blade cut into his neck, tearing through the flesh and cleaving bone, until his head hung to the side by a few bits of stringy muscle. Dohai kicked him backward into the broken seats. The Chimera tumbled over the side, his head snapping free and rolling away.
Corrin,
Dohai said. He crouched next to his friend, gasping for air.
You did it?
Corrin croaked.
We did it, brother, Dohai said.
He eyed the sword sticking through Corrin's chest, trying to determine how best to remove it.
It's okay, Corrin said,
no doubt seeing the realization in Dohai's eyes.
I'm ready for death.
No, you're not going to die. I won't lose another brother.
I died a long time ago, my friend. Fighting with you and Ghost was a great honor.
Corrin blinked.
Don't forget me, friend. I won't ever.
His eyes locked with Dohai as his chest went still.
Corrin,
Dohai said.
Corrin.
He put a finger to his neck, but there was no pulse. With a deep sigh, Dohai gently closed his friend's eyelids, then pushed himself up. Dohai staggered, his injured leg threatened to give out. Blood soiled his pants from the deep wound. He used the cutlass as a crutch to walk back to the stage where Fitz was still holding Rico in his arms.
Corrin,
he asked.
Gone,
Dohai said.
Is Rico okay?
She's in shock, but she's breathing. We have to get her out of here.
I'll finish the masterminds,
Dohai said. He picked up a rifle and aimed at the beasts, but as soon as he brought up the weapon, his vision blurred. He stumbled, then fell to one knee.
Dohai,
Fitz shouted. Dohai collapsed to his back, eyes on the web-covered ceiling. Fitz scrambled over.
Dohai, stay with me, Fitz said.
He tried his best, but his vision went dark. And in his mind's eye, Dohai saw Ace, Lincoln, Mendez, Corrin, and the spirits of all the warriors lost over the years.
I knew I would see you again, brothers.
27.
Madam President, I have good news and bad news, Sousa said.
Good news first, Ringgold replied.
We just got word from Ghost. Los Alamos is now under our control.
He put down the radio, but he didn't smile.
Unfortunately, the Prophet was not there. He's here in Galveston.
What? She tightened the strap of her rifle, then felt the bulge under her jacket where her M9 was tucked into her waistband for reassurance. The command staff on the balcony of the watchtower platform all looked over, and the three Secret Service agents on the platform shot Ringgold nervous glances.
Dr. Lovato was taken hostage by him, but the Prophet fled when Captain Beckham arrived, Sousa said. Captain Beckham is now hunting the Prophet with Master Sergeant Horn.
Beckham will take him down, Ringgold said, ready to breathe a sigh of relief.
I hope so, Sousa said. Dr. Lovato warned us that the Prophet is coming for you.
Good thing we have two of our best soldiers hunting him, Ringgold replied. She looked out over the watchtower platform at the Harbor House Hotel. The rain had stopped. All the enemy choppers had been taken out, but there were still thousands of enemy forces out there. Columns of oily smoke snaked into the air across the base. Constant gunfire and the thuds of explosions resonated from every direction between screams of pain and shrieks from hunting beasts. Cornelius walked over with his M4A1 cradled over his chest.
We're getting reports of more breaches along the eastern and western walls.
He looked out over the eastern part of the base.
Don't worry, Madam President. We will hold them.
Soprano rushed over with another handheld radio.
I'm hearing that variants are invading some of the civilian shelters on the southern part of downtown.
Ringgold felt a wave of sickness. Is there anything we can send them to help? Cornelius looked out over the raging fires and flashes of gunfire to the west.
We can pull a few teams away from the walls.
Make it happen, Ringgold said. Cornelius nodded at one of his men. Another explosion bloomed just a block away to their south. Flames roared up the side of a former hotel.
The tongues of fire illuminated nearly 20 variants and juveniles galloping down the street. A massive alpha heaved the charcoaled husk of a car toward a group of soldiers behind a barricade of sandbags.
"Take them out," Cornelius said.
A gunner on the platform directed his M240 and fired into the ranks of the monsters. Blasts from the sniper rifles followed. The alpha lumbered toward the sandbags, rounds punching into its muscular frame.
"Jesus," Cornelius said. "Give me that."
He reached out for a sniper rifle and took it from the soldier. Slinging his M4A1 over his back, Cornelius then shuttered the long rifle, aimed, and pulled the trigger. The top of the alpha's head flew off, and the beast dropped in front of the sandbags. Cornelius handed the gun back to the soldier and walked back over to Ringgold. "Nice shot," she said. Cornelius unslung his rifle, and Sousa shouldered his weapon as more creatures advanced on the streets outside the hotel.
"Madam President, you should shelter inside," Soprano said.
Her Secret Service agents moved toward her, ready to escort her down the stairs into the hotel. "No," she replied, raising her rifle. "I'm ready to fight." Cornelius raised a brow.
"I sort of regret running against Lemke and your party now, God rest his soul. But you know what I mean."
Ringgold nodded. "I'm sure he gladly would have run with you on the ticket." The shriek of variance silenced them.
"Oh, Jesus," Soprano said.
He crossed his chest and then pumped his shotgun.
"Get ready,"
Cornelius yelled. Gunfire from collaborators on another rooftop pinged off the walls. The agents surrounded Ringgold, bringing their rifles up as she aimed her barrel, recalling the lessons Cornelius had taught her over the past few days. She kept the reticules on the center mass of her target and fired. Each squeeze of the trigger was deliberate and careful, the stock of her rifle kicking back slightly against her shoulder. A collaborator dropped from one of her rounds. She paused for a moment from the shock of taking a human life. The variants were one thing, but no, these men are also monsters. The sound of gunfire and screams snapped her back to reality. The beasts were coming from all directions now, storming through Galveston. She aimed at the variants, trying to hit them, but they moved so damn fast. A jammed round forced her to lower her rifle and clear the chamber. By the time she shouldered her rifle again, some of the fighting on the streets had turned into hand-to-hand combat. The chimeras and variants lunged at the men and women clinging to survival, tearing at their flesh with claws and teeth. Again and again she squeezed the trigger. The crack of gunfire sounded all around her, answering the howls of the beasts threatening to overwhelm them from below. An hour of the fighting raged until corpses littered the street. Puddles on the asphalt turned red with blood. Seeing all of the pale corpses of the monsters filled Ringgold with hope that they could hold out for the arrival of the Mexican and Canadian reinforcements. A strange moment of silence passed over the watchtower as she reloaded. Sporadic gunshots echoed, but they seemed more spread out and further away.
"Anyone got eyes?" Cornelius called. "We're getting reports of movement to the north," Sousa called from the enclosed area with the comms officers.
"I see them," one of the snipers called out from the north wall.
"A hole!"
Before he finished his sentence, half his face was blown away by an incoming round. His body fell backward. Cornelius took the position and opened fire.
"On me!"
he shouted. Sousa and a group of three soldiers moved over to help. Ringgold strained for a look at the targets, her Secret Service agents following her. Between the columns of smoke, she saw chimeras running toward the hotel. One of those monsters wore a black cloak that she recognized from the horrific video of when Lemke had been butchered. A phalanx of chimeras ran close to protect the huge beast. Variants and juveniles swarmed onto the street from neighboring buildings. Gunfire suddenly pounded the platform. Ringgold went down on her stomach, the Secret Service agents crowding her. She watched as Cornelius jerked back from around to the shoulder. He regained his balance and kept firing. A pair of the machine gunners and the three snipers on the other walls rushed to help thwart the incoming attack. One of her Secret Service agents tried to help Ringgold back to her feet when a bullet lanced through his throat. Blood sprayed on her as he collapsed on top of her body.
"Get her out of here," Cornelius yelled.
Soprano grabbed Ringgold, and with the help of the two surviving agents, pulled her out from under the dead man.
She watched in horror as a set of claws reached up and grabbed a sniper at the wall, pulling him over the side. Soprano started to pull her away from the north side as chimeras climbed over the platform and tore into the soldiers there. One of the beasts struck Sousa in the face with a cutlass, severing his jaw. He reached up, but then fell to the platform, his dead eyes on Ringgold. "No," she choked. Cutlasses hacked into the soldiers, separating limbs and heads. Cornelius and three of his men rushed to stop the advancing monsters.
"Let me go,"
she yelled at Soprano. He loosened his grip and she raised her rifle, her two remaining agents aiming their own weapons. They both went down suddenly from sniper rounds. Rage flowed through her as she ducked down and changed her magazine, struggling to click it into the rifle.
"Madam President, watch out!" Soprano called.
She looked up as a chimera climbed the wall and dropped onto the platform. Soprano stepped in front of her and fired the shotgun into the super soldier. It jerked backward and growled at Soprano, who pumped the weapon.
"Oh, fuck," he said.
He turned to look at Ringgold as the chimera thrust his cutlass through his chest, skewering him before yanking the blade out. Soprano dropped in front of her, whispering his final words.
"I'm sorry."
The chimera started toward her, blood gushing from the shotgun blast to his side. He raised his cutlass when a bullet burst through his eye. Cornelius ran across the platform, lowering his pistol. He grabbed Ringgold and started to pull her away, but five chimeras had cornered them, three on one side and two on the other. She came together with her back against the general.
"This is it," Cornelius said. "Make each bullet count."
He raised his pistol, and Ringgold aimed her rifle, fighting the sheer terror and shock gripping her body. Two of the chimeras fell under their fire, but the other three made it through. One slammed into Cornelius and locked his jaws into the general's arm, squeezing and forcing him to drop the pistol. A headbutt to the face from the creature knocked Cornelius unconscious. Another creature yanked her rifle away and then angled a cutlass at her.
"We have the heretics!"
screamed the half-man guarding Cornelius. Another monstrous shape climbed over the side of the wall. Azrael. He heaved himself onto the platform, then surveyed the carnage. With a snort, he pulled his cutlass from over his back. He stalked toward Ringgold, black cape fluttering behind him. The three chimeras parted, letting him approach. Cornelius was still limp on the ground, unconscious.
"It's over," Azrael said. "You have lost, Jan Ringgold."
"It's not over," she managed to reply. Azrael narrowed his golden eyes, the point of his cutlass touching her neck.
"After all this time, you still don't understand."
He gestured out over Galveston with his claws.
"You have killed your people by failing to submit and join the new gods."
"Death is better than slavery," she replied. Ringgold held his gaze and inched her hand toward the pistol tucked under her jacket. "We took Los Alamos," she said, trying to buy time. "We freed your prisoners and they've joined us." Azrael prodded his cutlass under her chin, forcing her head up.
"I'm not worried about a group of dying, weak heretics. We will take Los Alamos back after we finish taking Galveston."
"Maybe. But you won't be there to see it." At first, Azrael looked confused. She whipped out her M9 and aimed it straight into his gut. A pull of the trigger put a round into his flesh, making him jerk back. His eyes widened slightly as she fired two more shots, both bullets making him recoil. Before she could fire a fourth shot, a cutlass came down on her hand from one of the chimeras. She tried to pull the trigger again, but her finger wouldn't work. A glance down and she saw her severed hand laying on the floor of the platform next to the pistol. Blood pumped out of her wrist, and the pain set in, electricity cutting through her nerves. She let out a scream as the pain pierced her shock. Azrael grabbed her by the throat and lifted her off the ground.
"The Allied States is mine," he roared.
Beckham lunged over another dead variant in the stairwell inside the Harbor House Hotel, leading up to the watchtower platform. Horn followed him, wobbling slightly as he took the steps two at a time, the effects of the concussion getting to him. The advance here had been difficult. He and Horn had traveled through abandoned and burning buildings, avoiding as many of the enemy forces as they could. Twice they had to stop and engage chimeras, but they had made it here. Now came the hard part. Leading the way, Beckham snuck up the last few steps toward the platform above the hotel. He paused on a landing and pointed up with his prosthetic hand, gesturing to Horn when he heard a voice. "We will never surrender." Beckham wasn't surprised that it was President Ringgold. He glanced back at Horn, who nodded back. They advanced slowly, their weapons at the ready. As they reached the top of the stairs, Beckham spotted both Ringgold and Cornelius on the platform against one of the 4-foot-high walls. Three chimeras loomed over them, two with cutlasses drawn, and a fourth, larger beast stood between them. It had to be the prophet, Azrael. The abomination of science and nature angled his sword at the president, but then slowly turned, sniffing the air. His golden eyes landed on Beckham.
"Reed Beckham, is that actually you in the flesh? Ah, I can smell your fear."
Two chimera guards walked over to the top of the stairs wielding their cutlasses, while the third chimera drew up its rifle and fired. "Down!" Beckham screamed. He slammed into Horn, knocking him down the stairs as bullets slammed into their former position. By the time they got up, the two chimeras had rushed down the steps to the landing. One of the creatures pounced on Horn, knocking him down the stairs while the second beast swung the cutlass at Beckham. He countered the blow with his rifle, deflecting the blade. The chimera pushed hard and pinned him to the landing. Beckham swiveled enough to get the monster off his chest, leaving a slight opening for the creature to chomp down at his neck. The chimera took the bait, and Beckham whipped up his arm to block the attack. The creature bit into it, tearing at his limb. But Beckham felt no pain. The monster had attacked his prosthetic and did not yet seem to realize its fatal mistake. With his good hand, Beckham reached for his K-bar and stabbed it into the side of the beast's exposed neck, unleashing a torrent of crimson. The creature clawed at his own neck to try and staunch the bleeding, his mouth opening and closing in desperation as if begging for his life. Beckham shoved it off, then scrambled to grab the chimera's cutlass.
"Boss, look out,"
Horn said, still wrestling with the other soldier on the stairs below. Gunfire lanced into the landing, and Beckham grabbed the dying chimera to use him as a shield from the chimera with the rifle that had nearly killed him and Horn before. The beast was at the top of the stairs now, firing down. As soon as it stopped to reload, Beckham pulled out a pistol from the holster of the dead chimera he was using as a shield and aimed, firing into the face of the sniper. The monster toppled down the stairs and landed on top of Beckham and the other creature. Beckham fell back under the weight of the dead chimeras, his head hitting the landing hard. As he squirmed to get free, a figure emerged on the platform above.
"I've waited too long for this," Azrael said. "Get up and face me."
"Boss, no,"
Horn called out. His voice sounded distant, but Beckham could see him on the landing below. Horn had managed to get out from under the chimera. He smashed the beast's skull against the brick wall of the stairwell. Over and over, he bashed the head, the monster spasming with each blow. Azrael walked down the stairs, a blood-soaked cutlass in his hand.
"I was going to give you one last chance to join the new gods, but now I'm just going to gut you and your ugly friend and drape your intestines over the walls."
Howls and shrieks of approaching variants sounded over the grisly voice of their master. Beckham tried to free himself, but the weight of the two creatures was too much to lift at the awkward angle he had fallen. He still held the pistol, but he couldn't raise it enough to shoot Azrael where he stood. The prophet moved slowly down the stairs, gripping his stomach with one hand and limping. Blood drooled out of the multiple gunshot wounds. If the brute kept coming closer, then soon he would be within Beckham's aim. He prepared to fire the pistol, hoping Azrael hadn't seen it. Azrael reached down and heaved the smaller chimeras off Beckham, then stomped on his wrist before he could pull the trigger. His fingers splayed from the impact, and the pistol clattered down the steps. Beckham cried out in agony, unable to hold in the scream.
"Boss!"
Horn shouted. Variance pounded up the stairs toward him as he got up, weaponless, except for his fists.
"Horn," Beckham choked. "Look at me,"
Azrael shouted. Beckham met the soulless gaze of the monster and prepared to meet his fate. He had held on to hope that he could save Galveston and his family. But how could they win against such evil? Azrael suddenly looked down the stairs as the variants bounded up the stairs.
"I want you to watch,"
Azrael growled. 4 thrall variants jumped to the landing where Horn waited with his fists raised. The creatures shrieked, sucker lips smacking, ready to feed.
"Fuck you,"
Horn yelled. He punched one of them in the face, breaking the jaw with a crack. Then he picked up a second and tossed it down the stairs. The other 2 beasts jumped onto him, sinking claws into his flesh.
"Horn!"
Beckham yelled. The variants slammed Horn into the railing along the wall before they all tumbled backward down the stairs out of Beckham's sight. He heard the bodies tumbling and smacking against the wall and stairs with sickening thumps. Images of Horn's girls and then his own family flashed through his eyes. All the people he loved, those who still lived, those he had lost. Thousands of lives depended on the outcome of this battle. He could not let them down. He could not let his country down. Beckham felt the cold blade of a cutlass tracing up his vest to his chin.
"I'm going to eat your heart first," Azrael said. "And I will make your wife and son watch."
Beckham swung his prosthetic hand at the blade, but Azrael countered it with a blow that cleaved off the prosthetic and the straps holding it to the remnants of his flesh and blood arm. Then he brought the cutlass above his head and let out a deafening howl. 3 loud gunshots rang out from above. For a moment, Azrael looked at Beckham, confusion and shock in his gaze. Beckham detected something else there. Fear. Azrael's mouth gaped open, and he dropped the cutlass. When he fell to the side, Beckham saw Ringgold looking down at him with a pistol in her remaining hand. She dropped the weapon and grabbed the stump where her other hand had been. Heavy footsteps pounded behind Beckham, and he turned, ready to face yet another attacker. Instead, he saw a familiar face.
"Boss,"
Horn gasped. He towered over Beckham, bruised, bloody, and bulging muscles throbbing. A true mountain of a man. He reached down to help Beckham to his feet. Holding on to each other, the Delta operators and best friends made their way up the stairs to their president. She had sat next to Cornelius again, resting her back against a wall. The grizzled general had his eyes closed. At first, Beckham feared the man was dead, but when he felt the general's neck, he detected a weak pulse pressing up against his finger. He turned to Ringgold next.
"Thank you. You saved my life."
"Just paying you back for all the times you saved mine," she said with a weak smile.
Beckham used his knife to cut strips off the shredded sleeve over his missing prosthetic, wincing in the pain from his injured wrist. He used the strips as a tourniquet to stop her bleeding, but she had already lost so much. It covered her shirt and pants.
"You're going to be okay," he said.
She could hardly nod.
"Is it over?"
Beckham wanted to tell her yes, but gunfire still rang out between the screams of people and the howls of beasts. Horn picked up an M4 and checked the magazine, then slammed it home.
"Boss, we've got more incoming," he said. "We better get the president and general out of here."
"No," Ringgold said. "You go. Save your families."
"I'm not leaving you," Beckham said.
A sudden clash of footsteps sounded from the stairwell at the center of the platform leading up from the hotel. 3 collaborators emerged, covered in blood and ash. Before they could so much as aim their rifles, Horn mowed them down with an M4.
"We have to move," Beckham said. "Come on, we're getting you."
Ringgold wrapped her fingers around his injured wrist. Then he saw the blood coming out from under her jacket.
and realized why there was so much. She had a second wound, a bullet to the abdomen.
"I'm sorry," she said.
"No, madam.
Reed,
I'm not going to make it," she said, her voice sounding weaker than before. "And if we do win this fight, I need you to promise me you'll keep fighting."
"I'll never stop."
He reached out to press his hand against her stomach to staunch the bleeding.
"It's too late for me."
She shook her head.
"Let me die with dignity."
Slowly, he pulled his hand away.
"Reed, I need you to promise me," she said.
"Anything. Just tell me what."
"Run for president. Preserve our democracy. Protect this country."
She coughed.
"The country and the world are going to need you."
Beckham hesitated, but he couldn't deny his president her dying wish.
"I will," he said. "You have my word."
A slight smile passed across her face, and a final sigh rushed out of her nose.
"Godspeed, Madam President," he whispered.
He blinked away the tears and bent down to kiss her on the forehead. Scattered gunshots rang out, drawing closer. Horn looked away from the wall toward Ringgold.
"Is she?"
"She's gone," Beckham said. For a moment, Horn was quiet and bowed his head.
"I'm sorry, but there's not time to mourn. We have to get to the shelters."
Beckham nodded. "Help me with the general." Horn bent down and slowly lifted Cornelius, preparing to hoist him into a fireman's carry despite his injuries. The general's eyes opened slowly, roving across the platform, and Horn helped him lean against the wall instead of picking him up.
"No,"
Cornelius muttered, Horn offering him his shoulder.
"Is she?" "She's gone, sir," Horn said. "Let me help you. We have to move."
Horn and Beckham bent down, but Cornelius pushed himself up on his own.
"What about command?"
Cornelius asked.
"Is Festus still alive?" "I'm not sure," Horn said.
Cornelius picked up a rifle, wincing in pain from the wound in his shoulder.
"You good?" Beckham asked. "I'll make it," he said.
They both looked at Ringgold one last time before proceeding to the stairs and heading down. As they made it to the lobby of the hotel, variants looked up from their meals between the scattered desks and snarled. Horn took one out with his rifle and then fired bursts at the others, sending the thin beasts sprawling in pools of their own blood. Beckham held an M9, but his wrist hurt so bad he wasn't sure he could pull the trigger. Feeling helpless, he stumbled along toward the street. Cornelius limped along slowly, struggling to keep his own weapon up. Despite the beating Horn had taken, the injuries didn't seem to slow the big man down. He took point, firing calculated shots in the thrall variants they encountered on the street. Gunfire exploded in waves across Galveston, and Beckham feared, even if they made it to shelter, it wouldn't be long before the beasts found them again, finishing the job the Prophet had started. After eliminating another pack of monsters, Beckham finally saw the concrete bunker with its thick steel doors where their kids were hiding. Corpses of humans and monsters lay all around it, but the doors still appeared secured, locked from the inside. They approached cautiously, walking through smoke drifting away from a burning truck. A distant rumble sounded, forcing them to stop and crouch behind the truck. As the noise grew louder, they turned to the east. Black dots flew across the sky, getting larger as they approached.
"Are they ours?"
Cornelius asked. Horn scoped the sky and then lowered the weapon with a smile.
"Must be the reinforcements our allies promised. Just in time to clean this place up."
Beckham kept moving to the shelter as the aircraft closed in on Galveston. The noise of their engines enveloped the island, and parachutes bloomed in long lines behind them. Troops descending toward this now sacred patch of Texas. Beckham tapped on the steel door with the pistol in his injured hand.
"Captain Reed Beckham, open up."
The door clicked, unlocked, and opened a hair. Connor, the Secret Service agent assigned to protect his family, looked out.
Oh, thank God, Connor said, opening the door. Kate just radioed in asking where you were.
She's okay? Beckham asked.
Connor nodded, locking the door to the shelter behind them.
Safe as of 10 minutes ago.
He let Cornelius wrap an arm around his shoulder, then guided him to a seat near the entry. Muffled gunfire and shrieks exploded above them, and the lights to the shelter sizzled on and off over the frightened faces.
Dad! Shouted a young voice.
Beckham and Horn both rushed over to greet their kids. Javier hugged Beckham, and Tasha and Jenny both embraced their father. A few booms rumbled through the shelter full of civilians, and Beckham tightened his arms around his son.
Dad, you're hurt, Jenny said.
I'll be okay. Are you girls fine?
Tasha loosened her grip.
Timothy is okay, right?
I think so, Horn said. He's with Kate.
A radio positioned near the shelter's door came to life.
Lieutenant Festa calling all shelters. Generals Vance and Hernandez of the Canadian and Mexican militaries have confirmed the arrival of their reinforcements. They are helping our troops retake the streets. I repeat, we are retaking Galveston. The enemy is falling back.
I guess this might not be the Alamo after all, Horn said. We're actually going to win this thing.
Beckham wanted to smile. But not everyone had gotten the ending they deserved.
Where's the president? Connor asked.
She died, protecting the country she loved, Beckham said. And in the end, she saved us all.
Epilogue.
Fitz wandered down the beach with Rico by his side. His blades sank into the yellow sand with each step, forcing him to walk slowly. That worked better for Rico anyway. Bruises covered her skin, and she walked with a limp from the vines that had nearly torn her apart. They strolled along the parts of the beach that met Galveston. The debris had mostly been cleared, allowing them to get close to the sun-glinted waves rolling in from the gulf.
Warm sunlight, seagulls, sand, Rico said. I could get used to this, Fitzy.
Yeah, me too.
They sat and stared for a while, taking in the view, before wandering back toward the city to meet their friends. Horn and Ruckley were already at a picnic table with Beckham and Kate. Sammy was there too, standing next to Dohai, who sat in a wheelchair. A brace surrounded his bandaged leg. He had been at the brink of death when a few chimeras and freed prisoners helped Fitz administer first aid to him in Los Alamos, stabilizing him enough to get him back to Galveston. Everyone looked in rough shape. Timothy had a swollen and scratched face, but Fitz wouldn't have been able to tell that he had a bruised rib if he hadn't already known. The young soldier was sitting by Tasha at the adjacent table, both smiling like kids in a candy shop. Javier and Jenny tossed sticks toward the waves for Ginger and Spark. The dogs raced after the sticks, kicking up rooster tails of sand.
5 days of cleanup, Rico said. And 5 days of...
She let the words trail off. Fitz knew what she wanted to say. Funerals and memorials. The troops from Canada and Mexico had assisted with cleaning up Galveston and helping take care of both the injured and the dead after clearing the city of the final beasts. But there was still too much work and mourning to be done before the Allied States could even begin to discuss the next stages of restoration. Fitz squeezed Rico's hand. They had a long road ahead of them, but he was eternally grateful to be alive with his friends.
Damn, I was just about to eat your food, Horn said as they approached the table. Just kidding. Kind of, but seriously, this shit is delicious.
He took a bite of a burrito, chewing with his mouth open. Ruckley shook her head.
You smell, you have no manners, and you curse a lot. Did anybody ever tell you that you're kind of an ogre?
Exactly your type, Timothy said. Ruckley gave him a glare.
Hey, it's obvious you two are perfect for each other, Timothy said.
Tasha and Jenny both chuckled, which told Fitz they must be warming up to the idea of their dad getting back out there. Fitz clapped the big guy on the shoulder and then helped Rico lower herself to the table.
You going to offer me some? Fitz asked.
Horn reached out and started piling pieces of roast chicken onto a plate.
Then he passed it to Fitz and Rico.
Don't judge, Horn said. I'm just preparing for the winter.
Funny, because I thought Texas winters weren't that harsh, Tasha said. Horn stopped eating a half-picked-off wing and looked toward Beckham.
I really can't catch a break with them.
Then he glanced at Javier.
Kid, are you like this with your parents?
No way, Javier said.
Because you're a young, respecting gentleman, Horn said.
They aren't as big as you either, Javier replied. Horn dropped the half-eaten wing on his plate and wagged his head. Beckham laughed. Javier apologized, Kate said. I'm sorry you're big around the middle, Javier said with a shrug. Not quite what I had in mind, Kate said. Horn let out a contagious laugh that got everyone to join in. Everyone except for Dohai. Fitz noticed the man's smile lasted for only a brief second.
I'll be right back, Fitz said to Rico.
He stood and went over to Dohai.
How are you doing, brother? Fitz asked.
Dohai simply nodded.
It'll get better, Fitz said. Everything will. We just have to trust in our future.
Dohai gave another slight nod, but he didn't appear convinced. A dark shadow seemed to hang over him that Fitz knew would not go away any time soon. Not after everything Dohai had witnessed and survived. The best he could do was offer his friendship to Dohai and support him through the nightmares that would haunt him.
We're here for you, brother, and that will never change, Fitz said.
Dohai smiled this time, a bit longer than the last grin. Fitz got behind his chair and pushed him up to the table next to Rico, who handed over a plate of food.
Thanks, Dohai said.
Javier leaned over the table, looking at Fitz.
Mr. Fitz, do you think you'll keep being a soldier? He asked.
Fitz hesitated a moment, Rico watching him.
You know, I think I'm getting too old for this stuff, he said.
Well, I'd be happy to take over Team Ghost if you ever step down, Timothy said.
Maybe someday, kid, Horn said. But not anytime soon. You got something to live for.
Tasha smiled as Horn winked at her.
I want to be a soldier, too, Javier said.
Kate sighed. How about starting out by helping me in the lab? I've still got work to do, and you might like it.
I can teach you how to do some cool stuff with computers, too, Sammy added.
Sounds boring, Javier said.
Computers are cool, Fitz said, winking at Kate. Maybe it's time I learn some of that computer stuff for retirement. You say that now, but look how retirement worked out for us, Beckham said. You never really retire from this job, no matter what the paperwork says. And sometimes boring is good, son.
Javier shrugged.
Want to look like me, kid?
Ruckley said, lifting her bandaged arm slightly.
Stick to the labs. Your body will thank you.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to look like this lady, Horn said.
You're such a...
Ruckley let her words slide, and Horn grinned.
You know, if my arm wasn't in a sling, I would elbow you right in the ribs, you smelly oaf, she said.
You're right. I've been rude. How about I make it up to you?
What did you have in mind?
How about dinner tomorrow? Horn asked.
Ruckley raised a brow like she wasn't sure what to think.
You serious?
Is that a yes, then?
If you shower, sure. God, first Timothy and Tasha, now you guys, Jenny said. So gross.
She feigned a disgusted expression, then picked up a stick and walked away with the dogs. More laughter spilled from the group. Fitz returned to Rico. She leaned her head against his shoulder as they watched Jenny play with the dogs. After everything they had gone through, he finally felt a sense of peace, and he vowed he would do everything in his power to ensure that it would last. If that meant staying a soldier, then so be it. He would never stop fighting for his friends, family, and flag. Beckham drove to the port of Galveston with Kate and Cornelius. A month had passed since they had defeated the new gods in Galveston. While the island was on the path to recovery, there were still plenty of signs of battle. Craters pocked the streets, and rubble still lay in piles where buildings had burned and collapsed. But repairs were already underway on other buildings like the Harbor House Hotel, which remained the new command center for the Allied States. Beckham looked toward the port while he drove around the potholes and cracks in the road. He slowed as they passed a 4-foot-high wall made of bricks recovered from many of the destroyed buildings. Each brick was inscribed with a name representing someone who had died in Galveston. In time, they would replace that memorial with a more permanent one. As the Allied States spread back into reclaimed territories, more memorials would be constructed, lest the nascent nation ever forget the sacrifices their people had made. Kate broke the silence. I got good news about the fallen chimeras we rescued. Most have been moved to the colony in Houston. Our doctors have been able to take care of their unique medical needs.
That is good news, Cornelia said.
Especially since there hasn't been any attacks or violence from or against the Chimera refugees as we first feared, Kate said. Beckham looked at the bricks they passed. Somewhere in that wall was one with Corin's name. The Chimera would be proud to hear that report.
It's a good start, Beckham said. The Chimeras deserve a new shot at life.
And I'm also happy to report that Sammy has confirmed over 90% of the network is dead due to anthrax, Kate said. We haven't detected any signals passing through the network since the defeat of Los Alamos, too. Whatever monsters that are left out there won't be able to reorganize or reunite through any webbing communications.
I've heard rumblings from some of the fallen chimeras that they would be willing to assist in our hunts to root out any of those remaining enemy forces, Cornelia said. Their senses, as Corin showed, would be enormously valuable to our recon groups.
I agree, Beckham said. We can start training them with our next class of recruits. It will be imperative in taking back our territories and rescuing stranded people out there.
Beckham thought about what was left. It wasn't much. Only a few outposts in Alabama and the panhandle of Florida had been confirmed as safe for resettlement. Once they started moving refugees, they would need to focus on revitalizing agriculture and industry. But it would be a long process. For the next 6 months, managing their existing stockpiles would be the key to survival. That and working with their allies. As they neared the port, Beckham spotted a massive cruiser docked along the pier that the United Kingdom had promised months ago. An entire contingent of European workers had arrived with the supplies. Next to the British naval cruiser was the sole surviving ship in the first fleet they had been able to restore with the help of their allies over the past month. It was a 500-foot-long Arleigh Burke-class destroyer that had managed to survive the battle with minor structural damage. A large crowd had gathered in front of the ship, soldiers and civilians spread over the street.
Big turnout, Kate said.
That ship gives us all something to rally around, Cornelia said.
Beckham parked and they all got out, starting toward a temporary platform built around the bow of the ship. A group of 6 Marines stood stiffly around the platform.
Ringgold would be very proud of what we've accomplished together, Captain, Cornelia said.
I can't thank you enough, General, Beckham replied. You have helped save our country.
You knew her better than perhaps any of us left on this island today. I imagine she would be looking forward to what you accomplish next.
What we will accomplish next, Beckham said.
Cornelius nodded.
Perhaps there's a better strategy for us to work together on the same presidential ticket, Beckham said.
Are you asking me to run with you?
I suppose now is as good a time as any, Beckham said.
I'd be proud to be your vice president.
Beckham was slightly taken aback. He figured Cornelius would want the top slot.
Don't act surprised, he said. I know it's what Jan would have wanted.
Beckham reached out, and Cornelius met his hand, sealing the deal with a shake.
I look forward to working with you to restore our country, Cornelius said.
We will bring it back from the brink, General, Beckham said.
I look forward to where the country is headed with you two working together, Kate said.
Fortunately, we have some of the greatest scientific minds in the world on our side, too, Beckham said. That'll be equally important to our future.
You can say that again, Cornelia said.
We wouldn't be here today without you, Doctor.
Kate smiled and then looked to Beckham.
You ready for this?
Yes.
He gripped her hand, and they started toward the crowd and the ship. Beckham was relieved to have her blessing to run, and even more relieved to have Cornelius running with him. What they needed right now was to support one another and work together, despite any differences they might have. As they approached the crowd, Beckham spotted his friends and family already there. Horn was with Javier and the girls, Fitz, Rico, Dohai, Timothy, Ruckley, and all the others. A month ago, they had all gathered in mourning and remembrance as they buried loved ones. But today was a brief reprieve from their sorrow. Perhaps one glimmer of light in a time marred by darkness. Beckham walked up a few steps to the platform and then took to the podium. Kate joined him, standing by his side. He looked at the city in the distance, seeing the ongoing restoration efforts and thinking of all the lives lost there. Next, he surveyed the survivors who had gathered here.
"Today, I am honored to stand before you as a soldier for this great nation," he said, his voice echoing over the speakers set to either side of the crowd. "Many gave their lives so we could be free. And while we have a mountain of work ahead, we have something more important that President Jan Ringel taught me about."
He paused, scanning the faces of his friends and family.
"We have hope. Even at the bleakest moments of her presidency, even when others cowered in fear, she carried the torch of hope for us, blazing a pathway for us to follow into a future filled with opportunity," he said. "To the very end of her life, she carried that hope. I am only here today because she took us this far. Now it's up to each and every one of us to take our turn carrying that torch."
Kate picked up an old bottle of champagne that had previously been set beside the podium. She handed it to Beckham.
"That's why on this day, I'm proud to christen the newest ship that we reintroduce back into the Allied States Navy, the USS Jan Ringgold."
He moved from the podium and toward the ship, breaking the champagne bottle against its hull. Applause broke out over the crowd. Beckham stepped back to admire the ship. It was a patchwork of repairs, and while it likely would never be restored to the same strength and functionality, it was a symbol of their country. Damaged, but striving to recover, like all the survivors. Beckham knew that with diligence, hard work, and with the people in this country who had gotten them this far, there was hope that he would never let die so long as he lived. And if they were lucky, they would pass that on for generations to come. Generations who would not only survive in this country, but thrive. A new society would be built from the ashes of the inferno that had enveloped the country. From this dark age, the Allied States would emerge again. And Captain Reed Beckham was ready to lead the charge with his wife, family, and friends. Blue Heron Audio hopes you have enjoyed our presentation of Darkness, Extinction Cycle, Dark Age, Book 4, by Nicholas Sansbury Smith and Anthony J. Melchiori, read by R.C. Bray. Text and audio copyrights, 2019, Nicholas Sansbury Smith. Published in arrangement with Blue Heron Audio. All rights reserved. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission from the authors.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.